Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshake.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Podcast listeners, thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 56 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Now, before we get into today's content, I just wanted to give you guys another reminder. This summer, June 1st and 2nd, Kansas City, Missouri is the location of the next Squat University seminar. And this is actually the only U.S. seminar scheduled at this time. You will not want to miss this event. If you want to improve your lifting technique, learn how to manage injuries that we all get from time to time whenever we're lifting heavy, you need to check out the seminar. Tickets are available on squatuniversity.com under the seminar tab at the top of the page. Now, in today's interview podcast, I had the awesome opportunity to sit down with one of the strongest powerlifters to ever walk the earth, Blaine Sumner. Blaine is an IPF world champion powerlifter who owns multiple world records. I'm sure many of you are familiar with his Instagram page, The Vanilla Gorilla 92, where he shares his footage of training and competition lifts, often going over 1,000 pounds on the regular in the squat. Just truly amazing. Today we got to talk about his training history, how he's gotten to be one of the strongest in the world, and the things he does weekly to keep his body strong and the injuries that he has had at bay. We also dive into the interesting 1,000+ calorie drink Blaine downs daily, the chicken shake. So without further ado, let's get to today's podcast. Blaine, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on the Squat University podcast. For those out there who do not know who you are, which I'm sure is barely a few people in the strength community, can you just give a quick introduction for yourself?
Sure. Blaine Sumner, sometimes better known as the Vanilla Gorilla. Biggest lifts in competition is a 1,113-pound squat, 1,003-pound bench, 817-pound deadlift, and 2805 total, all done in single-ply equipment, IPF conditions.
Awesome. One of the strongest humans walking the earth right now, that's for sure. So let's do this. I know, you know, most people probably know of all your accomplishments lifting-wise. We see all your videos, especially on Instagram. I mean, the huge squats, the amazing bench press from the last Arnold. So congrats on that. That was just crazy to see. I want to dive a little bit different with this podcast. Take me behind the scenes from things that we don't usually see. I want to see the things that, you know, throughout your year to year, your week to week, day to day, keep you lifting heavy and healthy. Let's talk about your routines as far as sleep, nutrition, and different things you do throughout the day to keep your body healthy.
Sure. I think there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people don't know. I kind of live a double, sometimes triple life. I have a full-time career totally outside and totally unrelated to lifting. I'm a petroleum engineer by trade. I work up in the northeast corner of Wyoming, doing completions, like frack jobs and stuff in the oil and gas industry. So it's a lot of stress, a lot of time, a lot of early mornings, late nights, long weekends. The phone never stops ringing. So it's, and I don't really advertise that at all on Instagram and stuff. I'm trying to keep my lives a little separate.
Yeah, but, for sure.
Yeah, so it's a lot of early mornings, long, stressful days at work. And then I have a wife and stepson on top of all that. But
Oh, wow. What's your current training program look like right now?
So right now I'm getting ready for the USAPL Open Nationals, which is in May. And, you know, over the past, I don't know, 10 or so years, I've kind of jumped all around the place in terms of training, but kept somewhat of a straight line. And I say that the biggest principle around my training is I do a lot of singles, and that's more so because I train in gear most of the time.
Okay.
And kind of my rule of thumb and my golden rule that I try and follow is I'm always trying to increase my opener. So I'm not trying to max out in training. Mm-hmm. But I'm always trying to increase my opener. I know if my opener goes up, then that means my top strength is going to go up. And something I consider an opener is, you know, you can triple it on a bad day. You can hit it in your sleep on a meet. So that's kind of my rule there.
Gotcha. What type of frequency do you usually train at? I know, you know, if you look up training frequencies and number of the elite powerlifters, you can see a variety of things. You get some people that train, you know, the squat once a week and that's it. And then you get other people that train it even more so, you know, three times a week. And then you get some people that are starting to bring in this sort of squat every day program. Obviously, you know, certain things work for certain people, but what have you found has been most efficient for you, at least in your, you know, most elite part of your career?
So in the past few years, I've gone as high as 4 days a week and then as low as 1 day a week. Mm. And I can say without a single doubt, the best that I've done, the most improvement that I've consistently put in my progress came from 1 day a week. And I don't think that that's necessarily due to a scientific muscular thing. It's because when I was making that progress, my squat night was like a dedicated squat night and I could get such like a high emotion, incredible adrenaline rush. Like I could get myself to such an emotional high every single time that I went in a squat. And it was more, the improvement was more due to that than anything else.
Gotcha. So that was like squat 1 day a week, deadlift 1 day a week, bench 1 day a week.
Yep.
Gotcha. Did you, when you originally started, because you've been powerlifting for some time now, when you were originally starting off, was that something that, you know, was a mainstay in your career, in your training habits, or did you start off with a lot more volume and then sort of shift towards 1 day a week as, you know, career changes and things like that come into play?
Yeah. So my start to heavy lifting was from football. I played football in high school and then in college, and it was a typical American football weight room, not great. Mm-hmm. So my first exposure to powerlifting was actually pretty positive one. I met a guy named Dan Gaudreau in Denver. He's been a world caliber lifter for years and years. And so he kind of put me on my first program and it was 1 day a week. And that's what I stuck with for a long time. And then around 2012, I started talking to Mike Tashier some more. And that's when the first time I jumped into higher frequency stuff.
So let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the nutrition side of things. Obviously, both of us, we're not experts in nutrition, but I just want to know, you know, personally speaking, what have you found that's been helpful, you know, as far as day-to-day or even, you know, specifically that sort of pre-workout meal? What works best for you that has allowed you to lift and find the best performance-wise?
Sure. I'm sure if the listeners follow the Instagram, they're well aware of the chicken shakes.
Yes. I got to know what is in the chicken shakes, man.
I honestly get more questions about that than any, and it's not even close, but generally it's just chicken, put rice in there, almonds for a fat source. And I put spinach in there just more for color than anything else.
Okay. How many calories are in each one of those shakes?
They're about 1,000, a little over 1,000.
Oh, wow. And how many of those do you think you drink a day?
I drink 8 a day.
Drink 8 a day. That's crazy. That is awesome.
So, I mean, anyone that knows me now, it was a surprise, you know, being 400 pounds. I actually don't have a big appetite. Like, I don't like to eat.
Really?
I don't like the time that it takes. And so with having, you know, the job and everything, I find efficient ways. And that's where it came from. I mean, I can chug. I can shake. So I can go hammer it out and be on my day.
Well, I remember, you know, back when all of us first started getting into supplements, you know, when we're younger, the first sort of thing you're put on, sort of exposed to, is sort of the meal replacement, you know, how to get more calories in your day because we're small and trying to gain mass and stuff like that. And I remember, you know, you'd see the 1,000, 2,000 calorie meal replacements. And yeah, it is much easier if you can't eat a big appetite. I mean, I'm one, I can barely eat like a full 12-inch sub at one time. So if I can drink a shake, you know, it's much easier to get those calories in. What do you like? What time of the day, first off, do you train usually? Because I know obviously you've got a job, so a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, I train in the evenings about from 5 to 8:30 or so.
Okay, what's your pre-workout meal look like? If you're training at 5, sort of what time are you taking that last meal? What's that look like a lot of times?
So if I start my training at 5, I'm taking my last shake about 4 to 4:30.
Okay, so it's one of the chicken shakes are sort of your pre-workout.
Yep.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Exactly. Perfect. Perfect. All right. So let's see. We talked about nutrition. We've talked about a little bit of the training habits. Obviously, you and me have talked about in the past a lot injuries. You know, every single person that goes through their career does not get up to a high level and still has a number of injuries. So let's talk about what injuries have you dealt with in the past?
The I've had a number of them. The two for sure biggest ones have been my disc problems, you know, ruptured, herniated, L5-S1, and then tearing both hip labrums.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And are those things that started earlier in your career, or just sort of came up later on, like as you were exposed more sort of powerlifting?
So the discs came, they were actually one of my earliest ones. It was probably 2008 or 9. And it just came from lifting dumb and not knowing how to do my back properly. And then both hip labrum tears came from raw squatting in competition.
Gotcha. And you've not had surgery, correct, on those?
Correct.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, I know we've talked about you were able to take a trip up to meet the man, Dr. Stuart McGill. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, that was life-changing. I just couldn't believe how open and welcoming he was. I mean, I stayed at his house a few nights, totally opened my eyes to how to properly take care of your back and treat your spine.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you had no idea of prior to? I mean, even obviously you're coming to him and you're a very accomplished lifter at the time. You're not weak by any means, you know, but what were some of the things that were sort of eye-opening that he was able to share with you?
So I guess me coming from a kind of a mechanical side, being an engineer, the way that he taught me, all of it made so much sense. Talking about how the spine is, you know, like a radio tower, how it's not supported and you need the guy wires coming out from that tower. And that's the same way that your core muscles, your lats all work together to support the spine. So that was the big one, one of the biggest ones. And then I'd say the second would be what he calls the spine hygiene. I always thought that it was going to be the heavy lifting, heavy deadlifts and squats that were going to hurt my back, which they sure can, but it's not treating your back right in the day-to-day work.
Yeah, for sure. Sort of like going throughout your day and understanding postures and stuff like that. What type of things are you more conscious of now, I guess, going throughout your day?
Being a big guy, the number one thing is tying my shoes, putting my shoes on, honestly. I mean, just to get down to the laces and stuff, you know, usually you just got to hunch yourself over and breathe out and just bend your back terribly. And then just standing up from a chair, from your bed, from anywhere, and learning to use your hips and not the back.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that most people don't realize is, you know, it's not just how you're using your body in the weight room and the type of techniques that you're using, but also what you're doing the other 90% of your day, how you're moving. Because if you move well in the gym, but then you move like crap the rest of the day and you're rounding your back going to pick a kid off the ground or something like that, that's just as more prone to set you up to having an eventual injury. And I know you've been doing, you said, you know, a number of different things to keep yourself healthy. Talk to me about sort of the corrective exercise program that you've been putting in, or sort of the warm-ups. Because I think most people, you know, we think of the strongest power lifters that they just walk in the room and they just straight put some weight on the bar and go. How long is your warm-up before you ever touch the barbell?
Probably a good 15, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. And sort of walk me through that. So we're coming in for squat day. What are sort of the different things that you like to do programmed out?
The very first thing I do is the McGill Big Three. I do that in the morning, I do it at lunchtime, and then I do it before I lift. That's stuff's exhausting. And especially when your back is feeling good and healthy, you want to not do it because you think, oh, my back's good now. But that's the hardest part. I mean, it still, even I've been doing it for a year and a half or 2 years now. And every day I do it, but every day I'm like, got to get it done.
Yeah. Now that's what type of rep range are you using? Are you doing the descending rep pyramid scheme, or?
That's how I started, but now I'm doing it three times a day, and I split it into three equal times. So I'll do 20 seconds, 20 second bird dog on one arm, 20 seconds on the other, 20 second plank each side.
Gotcha. 20 second. Okay. So you do even longer holds. Cause I know a lot of people at first they do just 10 seconds. So you do sort of one rep of each and then hold it for the full 20 seconds.
Yep.
And then just constant engagement basically the entire time.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause I know that can definitely be exhausting. A lot of people, they look at those sort of early or easy exercises. They look easy, but if you're doing them correctly and putting as much emphasis
into contracting your core and creating stiffness throughout your entire body. I remember when I was talking to Kelly Branton, he's like, holy crap, this big three is no joke. He's like sweating his butt off just doing a couple of the bird dogs. I'm like, that's what you got to be doing, because that's going to create that stimulus that carries over and going to keep that tension in your core so that you can lift that massive weight and not have those small micro movements that Dr. McGill talks about that are huge provokers of pain and instability in the core. All right, so you get done with the big three. What's that next step?
And then I get under the bar, unloaded, and actually go through some of the stuff that you had taught me when we talked a couple weeks or months ago with the bar, doing like goblets and sitting in the bottom, things like that.
How does that feel, the goblet squats? Because I know we talked about just doing like a 10 to 30 second hold. Does that feel like it opens up the hips and everything like that?
Yeah, it most definitely does.
Yeah.
And well, I like it too. I think there's so many people that over preach the flexibility, and I'm, you know, one of the believers, I need enough flexibility to go through my powerlift range of movements in a healthy fashion and no more. So,
well, especially, I mean, if your goal is to lift as much weight as possible in the sport of powerlifting, we have a certain depth that we're trying to get to. You know, if you're getting ass to grass, obviously that's a lot more range of motion that you're trying to bring that huge weight through. So I remember talking with Kelly about the same thing, is I don't need you to be the most flexible person in the world. I need just enough flexibility and mobility to get you to that point where we're not compensating with your technique quality or making your background. Because if you're missing ankle mobility or you're missing hip mobility, the back's going to suffer and you're going to see that hip turn under. I know, especially with your disc issues at the L4, L5, and S1 issue, you know, part of the spine, if you're missing hip mobility at that bottom, I know you've recognized that those hips turn under and you get that good amount of butt wink, which is just that stress concentration right on, you know, that small part of the spine, which as an engineer, you know very clearly what that stress concentration can do for the amount of force on that area. All right, so we've gone through the big three, you've done your goblet squat stretch, then it's time to work up. What's sort of your approach to, you know, the lighter weights and all the way up through? Because I know a lot of people, you know, they sort of half-ass the light weights. They're thinking, I'm just doing a couple reps, I'm going on up. You know, how are you priming yourself, maybe not only physically, but mentally, for those huge weights?
Yeah, I treat one plate the same as I treat 1,000 pounds. I mean, my steps are the exact same. The concentration, the speed of those steps, the placement of those steps, the placement of my bar, bracing, my breaths. I mean, everything is the exact same from rep to rep.
Yeah. I think that's one thing a lot of people don't realize, is that with every single one of these lifts, whether that's powerlifting or weightlifting, the technique and the mental approach is so imperative. And if you treat 50% like it's 100% walkout, foot placement, breath, brace, tempo, it's going to make those very heavy lifts feel just that much more like it's going on with it's a routine action.
Yeah. It's actually funny. So I record all of my lifts, not for my own purpose, not to put on the gram, but to review. I film it from two angles. And I obviously have songs that I like, and I'll go back and review lifts from week to week. And I have such routine, and I'm not thinking about it. Everything is just such habit, but I'll start my song. I'll go start a camera, go start another camera, go squat. And I, weeks and weeks apart, I have tons of video where like I'm hitting bottom at the exact same word.
That's crazy. Like,
within a second, it's wild.
Hey, I mean, but to be the best in the world, sometimes it's that routine and repetition of just perfect, you know, synchronization just over and over again that leads you to the top. You know, that's awesome. Yeah. So you're talking about video. What angles do you like to video yourself at for just your own personal review?
So I have two angles. One is either always like dead on or a little off center, and the other is from the side to watch for depth.
Gotcha. And so you said depth. What other type of things are you physically looking for technique wise when you're reviewing your lifts?
From the side, I watch my bar path a lot. At this point, my squats are so almost identical week to week. But I always look for that bar path. I use the reference of a Smith machine. It should look like it's in a Smith machine, straight down and straight up. And that one's always pretty good. And then, you know, with getting the different injuries and everything, some stuff I've started to have lately is an asymmetry from the front. Like I'll have one of my knees and one of my hips start to kind of cave in a little bit. So that's the stuff that I'm watching now.
Looking back on your training, what are things that you are doing now that you wish you had done differently when you first started powerlifting?
Man, that's a good question. I wish the answer was sexier, and it's not, but yeah. It's, and also if I told myself this back when I was younger, I don't know if I'd listen, but it would be to start with better technique first, like better techniques. I mean, squat to depth with proper hip, knee, spine alignment, deadlift with a locked in back with proper hip alignment. It's not sexy, but that's for sure what I would do. Cause it's so much harder now. Like, I would consider myself having, I think, a pretty inefficient squat. I have the long legs and everything, but I lean forward a lot. And, I think I have a relatively inefficient squat, and I've taken months and months of blocks at a time, like restarting to try and get depth with less vertical bar path, you know, have a more efficient squat. And
yeah,
I mean, I have to it's not like take one step forward and then two steps back. For me now at the level I'm at to go back and correct, it's like taking 10 back.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that's always tough when you're trying to tell someone that's really, really strong, but still at a young age where they haven't had the injuries, it's tough for them to listen, you know? And I mean, I've been the same way with myself. If I would have told myself at 18, what I'm thinking now, it's almost like, hey, don't tell me that. Cause who am I? I'm not going to get injured. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
When you're at eight and you can throw 10 pounds a week more on the squat bar than you could a week before, like,
yeah,
you stop and go back and correct stuff. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is the right thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk. I know we've talked about the squat a little bit. Tell me about the deadlift. What type of things have you been doing deadlift wise, as far as technique that you have sort of changed over the years to maintain the health of your back and your hips and everything like that?
Probably another unsexy answer, but from learning how the spine operates and the issues that I've had, sumo deadlifts have been much, much, much easier on my back. I feel very little stress when I execute a sumo deadlift properly.
Mm-hmm. When did you start switching to doing sumo?
Actually my entire powerlifting career, I've done both. Like, I mean, there's a period because they're both almost dead even about the same.
Yeah.
I think conventionals are cooler. It's a cooler deadlift, but you know, it's the sumo is definitely better on my back.
Yeah. Is there anything different that you do during your warm-ups for deadlift day than squat day?
The big three is always there, even before benching too. You know, on deadlifts, I'll probably put a plate on and try and, I guess it's similar to the goblet and sitting in the bottom, where I'll get to my starting position in the sumo and just try and open my hips up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. I can see how that can be very helpful, especially doing sumo, where you're going to need those hips opened up a little bit wider. Do you still have issues with the hip labrums in the bottom of a deadlift?
You know, not really. And I think it's because my hips start at a higher position.
Yeah.
And kind of backtracking on the conversation a little, and I don't know how many listeners care to jump in, but my entire powerlifting career for the first, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, I was like rah, rah, rah. I loved rah.
Yeah.
That was my heart, passion was. And when I tore my hip labrums, said surgery, I could have gotten the surgery, but the two orthos I saw said they'd have to cut through the hip and glute muscles and I would kind of be done after that. So putting the squat suit on was the only thing in the world that gave my hips relief.
Interesting.
My hips are really bad. Like, it's probably a 9 out of 10 pain squatting raw.
Oh, wow.
Probably a 3 out of 10 in the gear. So
that's difference. What
has been able to keep me going.
Now, I know you're talking about less pain during training. What's the after effects? How are you feeling different like, you know, within the couple hours after training in the next day, obviously with, you're not doing as frequent of lifting, but with the, you know, how tough that loading is in the intensity that you are going, how are you feeling different day after day with raw versus geared training?
That's another good question. You know, I still train raw as much as I can and
okay,
as my body allows, but I definitely have to dial back the intensity because it's when I push that squat, the raw squat or the raw deadlift close to failure,
yeah,
where my hips or I'll have those micro movements, you know,
mm-hmm,
and that's when I'll hurt my back or I'll hurt my hips more.
Gotcha.
And with my focus on competing, being in the gear, the risk isn't worth the reward for me to dial up the intensity on the raw training to maybe get a little stronger, do a little more,
mm-hmm,
but really high risk to keep getting injured.
Makes sense. Now, when you're talking about training raw and geared, is there days where it's just 100% raw and then other days where you're 100% geared, or as you're, you know, do you have sort of a combination where maybe you'll take your raw lifts up to a certain percentage and then gear up from then on out?
Yeah, good question. So, when I was first getting into the gear, I would do raw and equipped on the same day because at that point it was like, okay, I work up heavy in a raw squat and then I put the suit on and I squat the same way, just a little bit more. And now that I've spent a lot more time in the gear, I have a lot different cues that I use. So it kind of complicates it too much if I do heavy raw squat followed by equipped squat.
Okay.
With that being said, I work up to a somewhat heavy raw squat before I put the gear on,
mm-hmm,
but save my heavy raw training for a different day. And how heavy I go before putting the gear on depends on how my hips feel.
That makes sense. Now let's sort of go down that rabbit hole. You talked about sometimes there's different cues for geared versus non-geared lifting. Obviously from a weightlifting background, it's very new to me because I've never lifted gear at all. But we also have a number of power lifters that are very interested in the podcast. So let's talk about what are your cues, for, let's say the squat for non-geared raw lifting and then geared. How does that change?
Sure. I'm going to try and stay somewhat on topic while answering it. So the thing I loved about raw lifting and still do is that like squats and deadlifts, it's somewhat of a skilled, complicated movement, mm-hmm, but you can have somewhat of a mastery pretty quick. So what I loved about the raw lifting is that when I got to my heavy sets and training, when I competed, there was like nothing on my mind. It was just like every ounce of energy I had was spent towards getting an adrenaline rush, getting psyched up,
mm-hmm,
and not thinking about cues. Whereas the gear, it's totally different because there's a lot more thinking. So I definitely enjoy the more just like, let's go lift.
Part. Yeah.
On the squat, I kind of initiate both of them the same where, mm-hmm, I open my knees up a little bit, push my butt back a little bit, and then try and squat straight down. But I'd say in the gear, it's just more exaggerated. Try and open my knees up a little bit more, push my butt back a little bit more.
Gotcha. Okay. And how does the geared lifting change with the deadlift as far as your cues?
For me, not much at all, really. But instead of, you know, gripping and ripping, again, that's how I used to enjoy training, lifting around. It takes more time to get set, and you want to make sure when you're, you know, sitting back into the pull and pulling tension in the bar that you're not letting the tension from the gear get you out of position.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, let's take this a little bit different than usual because obviously it's a squat university, but let's talk that bench for a minute. I know you just had that 1,003-pound bench at the Arnold recently. Now tell me the story because I heard you attempted to bench 1,000 pounds twice because you did the bench first, right? And then you went to go do a full powerlifting meet after, correct?
Yep.
Tell me that whole story because that is just crazy.
So my training up here has been, it's kind of tough sometimes because my wife is the only one that I have help.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting lift offs from her, especially in the shirt, it's way tough. When you're in the shirt, you can help that much less. So 937 is the most that I had gone to in training,
mm-hmm,
and it was moving good. And actually the same thing has carried forward to my squat. Like I talked earlier about increasing my opener.
Yeah.
I'm getting off stuff. Sorry, but
that's all good.
That's really what I try and do in training. But whether it's squat or bench or deadlift, it's not uncommon for me to do 100 pounds more in a meet than I do in training.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, 937 was the most I had benched in training. And the Arnold's awesome because it's just, as a powerlifter, the biggest like spectacle that we can compete in front of. You feel like it's a bigger sport for an afternoon. And so I went going into the meet. I knew I was like, man, if I feel on fire, everything feels good, I'll do that 937 and then just go for 1,000, just swing for the fences. So I did the 937 and it was easier than I've ever done. I was like, yeah, it's there today.
Yeah.
So yeah, we jumped to the 1,000 and it was there that day, man. It was awesome.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And then had to finish the bench meet, had to run upstairs and weigh in for the full power.
Mm-hmm.
I just did my squat opener, which was 1025. And I wanted to bench 1,000 again. So I opened at 937. It went good. Went for 1,000 again. And I got out of the groove on the way down and the video looks pretty nasty.
Well, I'm glad you were able to walk away from it. You know, it's always scary when you see those big weights crash down and accidents happen, but thankfully you were safe. How's everything feeling now? Were there any injuries that have had to take some time off from training?
Nope, nothing serious. I mean, my elbow hurt, but about 2 days after I could tell that it wasn't mega serious.
You know,
have any bruising or swelling or significant loss of function.
That's good. That's good. Let's take our conversation now towards the, I guess we'll say, assistant side of things with exercises. Obviously, you've got your big three, the squat, deadlift, bench, that makes up a majority of your training. What types of exercises, assistant-wise, to follow those, do you like adding to your training? Let's talk first. Let's go squat first. What type of things are you doing to build up your squat as far as your assistant exercises following your main training?
Sure. So I prioritize everything as either 1, 2, or 3 priority.
Okay.
And for me, it's pretty basic. My equipped lifts are my first priority. I use the raw lifts as my second priority. Mm-hmm. And so my third priority is probably what most people's assistance is.
Okay.
And for squat, something that I've fallen in love/hate with the past 2 years is Bulgarian split squats with a safety bar.
Yeah.
They're terrible, but it's, you know, as powerful. We don't do a whole lot of unilateral work and they're good because you can, I mean, even a strong squatter can wreck themselves on there without having to load up a ton of weight. So,
yeah. And I find also if you spend a little bit of that time training single leg, you're often able to expose some weak links you may have in stability and coordination and then tackle it and it'll pay off with your regular lift as far as making sure that just your body's working well in line. Cause a lot of times it's almost like these weak links and stability and coordination are almost invisible to us. And it's not until we expose you to a different movement pattern, especially single leg for a power lifter or a weightlifter, you're like, holy crap, I need to know how tough that was. Working with one of my buddies I was doing his rehab, Josiah. He's big power lifter his entire life and had just a horrible knee injury. And through our rehab, I'm like, hey, we're doing single leg squats today. You know, just small squats off a touchdown box. And he's like, holy crap, I thought this was, you know, stupid kind of stuff at first. But then he saw how different it made him feel as far as his ability to coordinate his body in his regular squat whenever we trained single leg for a little bit too. As far as deadlift, what type of assistant things do you like doing? I saw the single arm holds in the rack. Tell me about those.
Yeah. So those are just for grip.
Mm-hmm.
My grip is, if I go over under, grip is my weakest link on deadlifts.
Yeah.
But as a deadlift assistant, I'd say RDLs are my favorite.
Okay. Gotcha. And what type of volume are you usually doing on those RDLs?
As much as I can handle, which isn't as much as most people, but, like 5x5 or five sets of five or 3 sets of 5.
Gotcha. My brand. Gotcha. And for anyone, I know we just talked, you know, got on the topic and off the topic, but grip strength, obviously as a powerlifter, grip strength is huge for the deadlift. And I know I've seen a couple of videos of you doing those rack pulls. So basically you set the bar up in the rack. And then you're grabbing directly in the middle. And how much weight are you loading onto it? And you're basically just doing what, like a 10-second hold? Or how long are you holding those for?
Yep, 10-second hold. And I've, like, 185 to probably 205 is the weights that I stay in.
What type of reps are you doing with that usually?
Usually I'll do 3 sets of 10 seconds for each hand, and then I'll pick another grip exercise after that.
Gotcha. That's perfect. Yeah. I know, you know, as far as grip strength goes, that can be a huge game changer for a lot of people because they may not be limited by their leg strength or their core stability, but also, you know, they got to get that grip. And you see a lot of people, they just sort of train with straps a lot, you know, so they're not necessarily training their grip strength all the time. Do you ever train with straps ever for your deadlift, or are you most always going without straps?
If I'm doing a competition type deadlift, no straps.
Gotcha.
If I move on to RDLs or something like that afterwards, I'll use straps.
Gotcha. Last two questions. First one, wraps versus sleeves as far as with the knees. I know you've had a history of knee issues stemming all the way back from high school and college with football. What is your experience training with both? And do you have recommendations for either using one or the other in training and or competition?
Sure. I'll try not to get too long-winded. So almost all of my injuries have all come from joints and cartilage. Mm-hmm. Both shoulder labrum's torn, both knee meniscus is torn, both hip labrum's torn. I don't know if I have some genetic thing or not, but my squat style also favors my knees. So like, I don't have a whole lot of forward knee travel.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get away without too much pain using sleeves. But if I had more forward knee travel, an upright squat, I for sure need knee wraps. And I'll throw this out there as a example for some of the listeners, but the listeners that have followed powerlifting for a couple of years have probably known Carl Ingvar Christensen, CYC. He probably had one of, if not the most beautiful squats I've ever seen. He was a single ply IPF lifter from Norway, had some knee problems, and he would wrap his knees with just the bar. You know, mm-hmm. His knees hurt bad. So they have their place.
Yeah, for sure. So most of the training you're doing is with wraps, correct?
When I train my raw squats, I go with just sleeves.
Gotcha. What type of sleeves do you usually like to use?
I use Titan Support Systems Yellow Jacket sleeves, they're called.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Last question. Who were the people in your life that you looked up to and took a lot of advice from whenever you were coming up and younger in the game? Who were people that helped you figure out styles of training, technique, and just made a big impact in your life?
For sure. So there's a couple of them. Dan Gaudreau, who I mentioned earlier, got me started, pointed in the right direction for sure in powerlifting, and he's still my game day coach and helps me a ton. I'd say Mike Teixeira has for sure been my biggest influence on training and kind of opened my eyes to thinking about training differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was younger, getting into the sport, kind of the bigger name guys that I looked up to was Brian Siders and Brad Gillingham.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I think that's probably good for today. Got a lot of people out there that now know a little bit more about your training and the different things you have done to keep your body healthy, but still hit some huge numbers, which is always awesome to watch. What meet are you prepping for right now? You said you've got one coming up in a number of weeks.
Yep, I've got the USAPL Open Nationals, which is, I think, May 12th in Chicago.
Very cool. Well, we'll be on the lookout for how you do there and share it around with everyone. For the listeners out there, where can they find you and follow all of your lifting?
I pretty much just use Instagram. It's TheVanillaGorilla92.
Awesome. Love it. Well, thanks so much for stopping by the show today. Everyone out there, go and follow Blaine and watch all of his awesome lifts because he's a great lifter and an even better guy. Until next time, guys, happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.